swung on, hit high in the air. Back goes Stubbs looking up, and this ball is off the top of the wall. Rosales in with a double. Oh, that almost got out of here. He hit the railing. That's a home run. This game's tied. Here comes the umpiring crew, and they signal that it is a double. Are you kidding me? Here comes Bob Melvin, and he's livid, and he's got a right to be. He just got thrown out of the game. Rosie, I have no idea what replay they saw. I don't know how you missed that call looking at the replay. That is a home run, and even with replay, Angel Hernandez got it wrong, and that's really not a surprise.
Good pitch. Bryce didn't think he swung. He gestures toward John Hirschbeck down at third base, and Hirschbeck's walking toward him, and now he's been thrown out of the game. John Hirschbeck was looking to throw him out, and Bryce Harper just got tossed. Threw down his helmet, and a guy 120 feet away throws him out. Hirschbeck was just dying to throw Harper out there, and he eventually did.
Now we see them. Wright had just got done warming up. He hasn't thrown a pitch yet or faced a batter, and he's leaving the field, and they're going to bring in a new pitcher, and Mike Socia is out there saying, hey, the rule states that if you bring in a pitcher, he's got to come in and face a batter here. I don't know that the rules of the game have changed from
the last 24 hours.
Yeah, it's under protest now. Yeah.
He's Mike. I am Greg, and we are Talking Baseball, episode number 3. And Mike, this week it's all about the umpires. They have not had what anybody would call a very good week.
Not even by umpire standards.
We've had a blown video replay where everybody in the world saw it was a home run except for Angel Hernandez. We had a situation in Houston with the Angels where a substitution that I think everybody that even knows a little bit about baseball knows you can't do was allowed to stand. So Mike Socia protested the game, rightfully so. And we've got John Hirschbeck being John Hirschbeck. Where do you want to start?
The Hirschbeck thing happened first, so
okay,
maybe we should start there. It was last Sunday in the very first inning. There was a pitch where Bryce Harper checked. He did not believe he went around. They went to Hirschbeck, who was at third base. Hirschbeck ruled him out. Apparently, at that point, Harper said something or kind of did like a little... Apparently, he might have thrown his hands up. But then Hirschbeck threw his hands up. And rather than letting it go away, Hirschbeck continued to walk towards him, yelling at him, antagonizing the situation, and then ejected him.
Yes, and if you listen to the announcers, I watched the clip of that today, and they said that basically John Hirschbeck was looking for a reason to throw Bryce Harper out of the game. The bigger picture, I think, here is there are a lot of umpires. We talked about a few before we started the show. You got Hirschbeck, Joe West, Angel Hernandez. These guys that they want to be, I guess for lack of a better term, overly aggressive would be the way I would put it. These guys, you've just got guys out there that want to just start trouble all the time, and what does baseball do about that?
The Players Union and the Umpires Union have very much kind of stood firm together. And because of that, it's become very difficult to even make umpires accountable for their actions, much less find a way to discipline them.
It's ridiculous because I will preface all this by saying that I think that Major League umpires of all the officiating and all the big four sports are by far and away the best. But I saw the clip. Harper threw his arms up, yes. You could say he showed up the umpire, but I didn't think it was anything that egregious. And Hirschbeck was the one that wanted to carry it on through. And I just think that that kind of nonsense has no place. But like you said, what are you going to do about it? But it doesn't help the game at all to see this kind of stuff happen, especially in the case of a guy like Harper, where you've got people that showed up just to see that kid play, and he's gone in the first inning because John Hirschbeck decides, I didn't like the fact that he threw his arms up on a questionable strike call. That is just wrong to me. Hirschbeck is the least of our problems, though. I mean, that you can debate. But one thing that's pretty much non-debatable was the blown call in the Indians-A's game last week. Top of the ninth inning, A's are down a run. Rosales hits the ball. The ball bounced back onto the field, and Rosales is at second with a double. Well, then Bob Melvin comes out of the dugout. Let's take a look at it. The umpiring crew goes into the booth, looks at it, comes back out. Everybody that's seen the replay goes, man, that's a home run. Everybody in the world saw it, except for Angel Hernandez, who said, nope, it's still a double.
Well, I want to share a little bit of speculation from Peter Gammons. He was on the Dan Patrick Show the day after it happened. He basically said that he thinks that Angel Hernandez intentionally missed the call because he wasn't going to let himself get overruled, because he's philosophically opposed to instant replay.
Every single call that I listened to of that game, everyone said, how can all four of them miss that? But it happened. What do you do about it?
I told you before we went on the air that I had this solution.
Okay.
A solution that would never, ever go in.
All right. Well, let's hear it anyway.
One that you'd get some concessions towards the umpires and a lot of concession towards baseball and towards the fans. Add a fifth umpire to each crew, put him up in a booth full time, have him be just handle replays. Now, the first part of this would be, if there's a close play and it goes against your team, what is that team's manager doing the very first thing that happens?
He's coming out of their dugout screaming and yelling.
Yes, and how long does that take?
It can take a long time sometimes.
All right. First thing I do is set a rule that if you come out to argue a play, you're immediately ejected.
Okay.
But that any play that the umpire up there in the booth chooses to see as a close play, and he can replay them all instantly before the next batter would even come up using the TV cameras that they currently have. He could overturn it. You know, they could announce it on the scoreboard. There would be more umpires in the union, which would help the umpires add more jobs. And on top of that, I mean, if you're rotating every fifth day and you're in a booth, that's almost like having a day off.
Right.
You know, it does not have the physical strain that being out there in the field, particularly whenever it's like 110 degrees, would have. However, the flip side of that would be that the umpires would have to be held accountable for the plays that they choose to overturn and the plays that they don't choose to overturn. And that would mean that, you know, the umpires would have to face the media just like players do, just like managers do, to kind of justify themselves. And, you know, I think that if that was to happen, if baseball could somehow make that happen, the game would be faster, it'd be more accurate, and it would all work out. But once again, I mean, I think that would work. Will baseball allow it to happen? Probably not.
I got to say that to me sounds like the perfect plan. You totally destroyed my argument of time constraints and all that. So essentially, you're looking at it as kind of the way college football does it. It's not a challenge system like we have in the NFL. It's just basically you've got a guy that just watches the game, and if he sees a call that's questionable, you could even do the buzzer thing like they do in football. You buzz down and go, hey, hold on a minute. And I like the idea of, if you're going to implement this rule, then yes, if a manager – here's what I would suggest – with that, if the manager comes out on a close play, not only is he ejected, but that's it. There's no replay. So you kind of screw yourself. So let's say that there is a call that's clearly wrong that could be corrected by replay. You can screw yourself by not letting the process, you know, run its natural course. So I think it's a great idea. I don't know. I can't see a single problem with it. And you're right. From a union standpoint, it creates more jobs. It gives a guy a night off. And I don't know, man, you should send that to Bud Seeley, because to me, it's a perfect solution.
Hit well to right center field, toward the wall, and it is a home run and a walk-off at that for Andrew McCutchen. Raise the Jolly Roger, leading off the bottom of the 12th with a game winner.
Something's wrong all across Los Angeles, the Dodgers and the Angels.
Well, you know what? It's not just those two. Let's look at the standings here. Look at Toronto, 15-24, 9 games under 500. They're finished. They're not going to come back, not in that division. Okay, there's one of the big money teams. Angels, 14-22. Dodgers, bringing up the rear in the National League West at 14-21.
And with me, I don't necessarily think it's about the talent. A lot of it is about having balance in some of these teams. And, I mean, you look at a team like the Angels, for example. I mean, the Dodgers are kind of a unique situation because the Dodgers have had a lot of injury issues. They had deep pitching to begin with, and now I'm sure they're grateful because they've seemed to have to use every single one of those pieces. For a team like the Angels, that was a team that was constructed to where if you don't score a lot of runs, God help you. Their pitching was bullpen that was basically held together by chicken wire. And a starting rotation that had Jared Weaver, who is a very good pitcher, but there are reasons to think that over the course of his current contract that he might be less valuable than you might have thought originally. I mean, his his stuff hasn't been as sharp. His velocity's been down, and now he's been hurt for a while now too. After that, you've got C.J. Wilson, who had a really bad second half of the last season, and then you've got reclamation projects and career back of the rotation replacement player types.
I agree completely. Going into the season, you look at it, and I'll tell you this, I don't even think that their lineup is as fearsome as it would look on paper. You've got Hamilton, who is going, he's what, in his age 32 season this year, I believe? And Pujols, I think, is, I want to say 34, 35, maybe even older. Somebody brought this up, that they didn't see these guys hitting this poorly for the season, and they may not. They may straighten it out a little bit, but I think it's a little unreasonable at this point in the proceedings to expect either one of those guys to come out and put up the numbers that we expect from them at this point in their careers. I'm not saying that Pujols won't have a pretty good season, but I think if you were an Angels fan going into this season and you were looking at Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols as giving you, 40 home runs, 120 RBI, I think your expectations were a little too high, because these guys are, and we talked about it on last week's show, the age thing is starting to come into play here. They aren't going to keep getting better. It's just going to be a steady decline down the other side of the hill here. So this Angels team, a lot of expectations coming in, but I got to be honest, I'm not terribly surprised that they're in the shape they're in right now.
It's kind of funny. We were talking about on the Rangers blog I go to a year ago, Josh Hamilton was hitting over 400, slugging over 700. It just that, it's at that point of the year where he looked like, if he kept that up that year, he was going to shatter all of the Triple Crown stuff, all of the everything. I mean, it was like the week of his four home run game in Baltimore that was kind of the apex of last season. And this year he's hitting 200 and slugging 330.
Right. Once you get 32 and on, I mean, yeah, they can still have a great season, but it's just as easy that they couldn't at this point in their careers. And I think that's the thing. I don't think that I don't think the Angels come out of this tailspin. I don't think we're going to see what we saw last year, where they have a bad April and then put it together the rest of the way and just barely make the playoffs. I think this is going to be a long run and a tough year for Angels fans to get through, because I just don't see where they're going to find what they need with what they have right now.
For what it's worth, I actually think that Pujols is older than what he says.
Very well could be.
There was a lot of heavy speculation, and even in like his early stuff right after he got drafted, it's kind of, that it's accepted that he's several years older than what he claims. And that, people thought that would affect his developmental, and obviously it didn't, considering what he went on to be. He's officially 34. I would not be surprised if it's closer to 36.
Exactly. And when you've got players that last year their name was this and this year their name is that, players that from Latin America, and this is no knock or no anything, it's just that it just happens. Guys lie about their ages. It's harder to keep track of that stuff. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he's 36. And if he's 36 as opposed to 34, I can tell you with a reasonable degree of certainty he's not going to turn it around this year. Not to say what's he hitting right now? I'm not even sure. I know it's not the greatest. I just, if you're looking for, like I said, a 330 batting average and, 35, 40 home runs and 110 RBI, it ain't going to happen. I just don't see it. It's going to be a long season for the Angels, because between the pitching staff, Hamilton, and not to mention the fact that Hamilton's a head case to begin with, I just don't see it happening. I don't know how they turn it around with what they have at their disposal right now. You're spending a lot of money to go 80 and 82, I think. While we're on teams that are falling well below expectations, what about the Toronto Blue Jays?
Nothing really seems to be making sense there, and we kind of talked about it on episode one. And I don't necessarily think that it is something where, a lot of people are now kind of looking at it, it's like, yeah, you need chemistry and everything. I mean, I understand that, and I think that the clubhouse chemistry is important, but I do think it often gets overrated.
Just a little.
And with these guys, I mean, it's guys who just... R.A. Dickey is not pitching like somebody who, just came off of Cy Young, somebody who has basically been a stud for the last 3 years, which he had been in New York. He's pitching like a 36-year-old kind of journeyman starter for the most part, and... I'm a big proponent that if you're building a team that you want to improve your team in whatever way you can, you want to add talent, that there's almost no situation where you would want to exchange production for character. The Yankees were a great example. A lot of those guys couldn't fucking stand each other out of that locker room, but they went in every day, they did their jobs, and you know those teams have a lot of rings to show for it.
Well, I'll give you an even better example than the Yankees, the A's of the 70s. That team, they hated each other. They were notorious for fighting with each other, not getting along. The one thing that unified them, or the two things that unified them as a team, was they wanted to win, and they hated Charlie O'Finley. But other than that, there was no team chemistry there. Is that what the argument is in Toronto, that they have no team chemistry, and that's what the problem is?
Yeah, that it's there's a reason why Miami traded them. And yeah, there is. It's because they're really fucking cheap.
Yeah, the reason they got traded is because they were making way too much money for Jeff Loria. But I just don't buy that either. I think that, you know, R.A. Dickey, you said it yourself, he's pitching like a 36-year-old knuckleballer. When the knuckleball's on, it's tough, and he showed that. But if it's not, you're throwing batting practice. It's as simple as that. And I haven't seen him pitch this year. I don't know what his problem is, but I know this, that the Toronto Blue Jays, going into the season, they were the fashion pick by everybody. Look at what they've done. They're really going to be something. But I don't see them recovering from this. I don't either. Not in that division.
And keep in mind that I'm somebody, you know, I don't put a lot of stats in things like batting average and stuff. But, you know, whenever you consider the fact that of the guys that need to qualify, their batting leader is Melky Cabrera, who's hitting .261. They only have six batters who would qualify for a batting title. They've suffered injuries to Brett Lawrie. They've suffered injuries to Jose Reyes. You know, guys that they really expected to come through and do stuff, and they haven't been able to. And their pitching has just been terrible, but it's not because there's a chemistry issue. It's because their ERA leader is at 4.69.
Chemistry doesn't get guys out, unfortunately. Looking at it, and this could just be a year that just turned out this way, but you look at the three teams that spent the big money, made the big splashes with payroll and all that, and you look at where they are in the standings. Two out of the three are in last place, and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim thank their lucky stars every day that the Houston Astros exist, because if it wasn't for that, they'd be in last place as well. I don't know what the problem is. All I know is this, that I wouldn't be making October plans if I were any of those three teams.
Guthrie, line drive, base hit. Rogers around third. There's a throw. It's not in time. And the Rangers walk it off. Adrian Beltre, a walk-off winner. The Rangers win 4-3.
All right, and before we get out of here, it is time for Who Won the Week. Mike, who won the week for you this week?
I'm going to have a team and a player. The team is the St. Louis Cardinals, as much as I hate to admit it. They've been on fire lately. I still don't necessarily think that they're better than the Reds over the course of 162. But, I mean, right now they're playing great baseball. They're 8-2 over the last 10. And right now they're looking like the team to beat in the National League. My player is somebody who kind of single-handedly has almost made it where I almost listed Tampa Bay as my team that won the week, and that is Evan Longoria. Now, if you have not seen what he's done over the last few days, .414 average, .485 on base percentage, he's hit 11 RBI, 3 home run. He is the reason why that Tampa Bay team is not left for dead right now, because outside of him, their offense isn't doing much and probably won't do much until Will Myers gets called up, but maybe that's just me venting my frustration at the Rays.
And for me, who won the week, it's a tie. The New York Yankees, 7-3 in their last 10, a record of 23-13, and one game ahead of the surging Baltimore Orioles to take first place in the American League East. How they're doing it, I don't know. Everybody on the team's 48 years old, but here they are. And the Cleveland Indians, 8-2 in their last 10, tied for first in the Central with the Detroit Tigers. So the Indians, and I think you're going to see a lot of this with this Indians team this year. When the bats are on, they're going to be pretty good. But with a team like them that is prone to strike out the way they are, this 8-2 in their last 10 could easily turn around to be a 2-8 in their next 10. But right now, 8-2 in their last 10 and first in the American League Central. So that's who won the week for me. So we've got the St. Louis Cardinals, Evan Longoria, the Yankees, and the Indians as who won the week this week on Mike and Greg Talk Baseball. Any final thoughts before we do the plugs and get out of here?
Well, I was just going to say that I think the Yankees must be sacrificing chickens in that locker room to
something, because I don't know how they do it. All right, let's do the plugs and call it a day.
Last week, it's been up for a few days. Gotten a lot of really great feedback about it for Off the Top Rope. We did our episode where we reviewed WCW Sold Out 1998 with Jason Mann of WrestleSpective. I've been plugging that one for a couple weeks because, you know, he's somebody who's got a big show, and it was really cool of him to come on, and he's done a really great job of promoting the show after the fact. This week we are talking Championship Wrestling from Florida, Battle of the Belts from 1986. We're going a little bit back in time to this week, so I'm excited about that. The hip-hop podcast that I was talking about forming, it has been out. It's available at rhymeoverbeats.wordpress.com.
All right, and you can check out Basically a Sports Show. We are live at 10 every Monday night on Ustream. You can also check us out at basicallyasportsshow.com. And coming in the very near future, the Classic Rock Cast. The first episode is lined up and ready to go. We will be interviewing Mitch, Michael, and Tommy from the podcast Three Sides of the Coin. You wanted the best. You got the best. We're going to talk about Kiss. So that's coming up on the Classic Rock Cast. That's going to wrap it up for this week of Mike and Greg Talk Baseball. We sure appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Take it easy, everybody.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again.